Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, Jay Fox has info on tax cuts for small businesses in the capital city. He'll also talk with one of the organizers of a popular summer festival in Central Ohio, and he'll have details on the annual National League of Cities Conference. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective.
Here in Columbus, the Small Business Administration estimates that there are approximately 122,000 small businesses, which represent almost 98% of all businesses here in the capital city. As Congress debates tax reform ahead of the expiration of key Tax Cuts and Jobs Act provisions this year, a new national survey of 863 small business owners conducted between December 13, 2024 and January 29th of this year reveals that the law failed to deliver on its promise to boost Main Street growth and job creation. Ann Zimmerman is a small business CPA and president at Ohio-based CPA firm Zimmerman & Company and joins us now on Columbus Perspective. Good morning.
Good morning, Jay. How are you? Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. I'm fine. What did small business owners think they were going to get out of this law?
Out of the original PCJA?
Yep.
They thought they would hopefully get an even playing field a little more with large business owners. Unfortunately, it didn't happen that way. And most of us small business owners weren't able to hire or expand or improve because of the meager complex savings that we got from it.
So the survey showed that large corporations received permanent substantial tax cuts, but that small businesses, which employ nearly half of all working Americans, saw little meaningful benefit. Why did these folks perceive that it failed? Did it not do anything for them at all?
Well, I'll tell you, 43% of our respondents saw no positive impact whatsoever from that legislation. It's really complex, and some small business owners haven't even been able to take it. Others have. But large companies just got a straight across the board, simple, permanent 40% tax cut. And small businesses, the pastures, got a 20% temporary complex 199A deduction. You know, that's the difference that didn't help the small business. And small business is so important to our communities. It's so important to our overall all economic growth. We know for a fact that small business led the way out of the 08 recession. And with the economy the way it is right now, we can't afford for small business not to be strong.
Well, as you know, being a small business owner in Ohio, Governor Mike DeWine has allocated significant funds to small communities to upgrade main streets and to provide for small business growth and development, as well as doing things with large corporations. Obviously, we see all of the development that is happening in Central Ohio with the seven majors coming in with their data centers. The question I have for you is, what is a more workable federal solution that would help boost Main Street and focus on small business job growth?
Well, you know, it's got to be simpler. We need to reimagine and not renew the small business deduction. I mean, we could even have a standard deduction for small business, or make the first $25,000 tax-free, right? When the TCJA was brought in, the corporate rate, that actually raised the tax rates on some small C corporations, because it used to be progressive and staggered, starting at 15%, and it went to a flat 21. Modernizing the IRS to improve small business services would be huge. It's supported by like 92% of our respondents. In the old days, you used to be able to call the IRS and ask them a question. I could have called and talked to them about depreciation, make sure I was doing it right for my small business, but that's long gone. Right now, we can't even get calls through. We were able to when they started rebuilding with the infrastructure money that came through, but with the cuts that are happening now, I'm already seeing it slow down, so we can't talk to the IRS. They should be working collaboratively with our small business owners. Our small business owners are honest working people. They're not trying to cheat the tax system. They're trying to be compliant. The IRS should help them with that,
so,
right?
So you talked a little bit about the respondents to this survey, and there were 863 small business owners surveyed. Everybody appears to be on the same page. Where do our Ohio legislators stand on this issue?
You know, I'm afraid they're still really grabbing for the big guys and helping the big guys at the expense of the state and other things needed here. We've seen, you know, scandal after scandal run through Columbus and not a lot of change made. I'm not real hopeful right now.
So that being said, if I'm a small business owner and I'm listening to this program and it's the weekend and I've got my coffee going and I'm relaxed and I hear this and I hear somebody like you say you're not real hopeful, the first thing I'm going to say is, how can I get involved and what can I do? What's the answer?
Sure. Well, we Small Business for America's Future, which can be found at smallbusinessforamericasfuture.org, give a voice to small businesses. Call your legislators. Get involved, work with us even. We do a lot of education. We do a lot of connection with Washington, that sort of thing. Reach out and we'll put you to work.
That sounds like a plan. We want to thank Ann Zimmerman for joining us this morning. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's Jay Fox.
The Dublin, Ohio Irish Festival has won the USA Today 10 Best 2025 Reader's Choice Award for Best Cultural Festival. Allison Leroy, the City of Dublin Director of Events, joins us now on Columbus Perspective. Hey, Allison, congrats on the award. Wow.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it. I mean, we always knew we were great, but to be recognized on the national scale like that is really wonderful.
Well, this isn't the first time the festival's been on the top 10 list, but it is the first time that the festival has won it all. How does it feel to be best in the country?
You know, it's really great because it's a voter thing. So that means the people who come to our festival, who love our festival, really stepped up for us. So they've been there for us, but this year they kind of gave it the extra push. And it just shows how much people are invested in the festival.
I've been to the festival many times. Why do you think this year was your year as opposed to years past?
Oh, that's a good question. I actually, maybe it was, you know, helping us out because last year, unfortunately, the festival, we had to close for a bit on Friday and Saturday. It wasn't our best weather year, so I think everybody was there for us and willing to give us the push to get ahead.
Yeah, I do remember the weather being an issue, and a lot of Columbus area festivals in 2024 also had security concerns. Was that an issue for you guys as well?
We didn't didn't really have the security concerns. You know, anytime you do an outdoor event, it's things you have to worry about. We are very lucky because we are part of the city of Dublin. We have our Dublin police officers with us every step of the way. So, you know, anytime something happens elsewhere in the country, you know, you hear about something happened at this festival or somewhere across the country, we sit down with our police officers and really have that discussion about, okay, how could that happen here and how could we make sure that we're prepared for it or we're able to prevent it.
Let's talk about what's new for 2025, because I know this isn't going to be a shock to you, and it's probably a shock to me as well. There are people who have not come to this festival, so let's make this the year. So when is the festival, where is the festival, and what's new?
The festival is actually the August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. It's in Kaufman Park, which is in Dublin. We are lucky to have a beautiful park in the middle of Dublin where we can host this. And one of the things that's great about our event every year is just the ability to get kind of a taste of Ireland. We have the music, which everybody knows about, but it's the shopping, the food, the whiskey. One of the big favorites, obviously, people love to come see the Irish dogs. We have Highland gang competitions. You know, there's just so much. I think when anybody comes for the first time, they're all kind of shocked about how much stuff there really is to do there.
You know, it never disappoints, because when you walk into the festival, the first thing that I always remember is I'm immediately overwhelmed by the smell of food. And then as you work your way down the midway, if that's what you want to call it, you know, there's all kinds of interesting booths and interesting crafters and artisans. And then you start noticing the music. And it just continues to pull you in. And then, of course, the beer and, you know, the whiskey. And do you think that the tariffs are going to have any impact on the whiskey this year?
Yeah, we're kind of watching that. It's one of those things, you know, it's an ever-changing thing going on right now. Even some of our vendors that come in, they bring a lot of goods in from Ireland. So we know some of those people are concerned as well, and we've heard it from them. And it's just really a wait and see, and we'll just see what happens when August rolls around.
Absolutely. So when did tickets go on sale?
So the tickets went on sale on St. Patrick's Day. We did. We have a flash sale, and it's for 17 days. We started on the 17th, and the tickets are $17, which is really a great deal. We also have weekend packages. But if you wait and buy it at the gate, they're $30. So it's a huge savings to get them now.
So I have a personal question. Have you guys ever done a farthest travel contest to see who has traveled the furthest to attend this event?
No, we haven't. We know we have people from California that come every year. I say probably our all-time winner was last year we had a band from Japan. So if we're going to count bands, I think that band from Japan might win. But that might be a fun thing for us to do.
I think you should have the Jay Fox, Ohio News Network, Columbus Perspective, furthest visitor contest. And then they get a shamrock if they win.
Oh, I think that's I think we'll go further. We'll give them a T-shirt or something.
A shamrock and a T-shirt. I love that.
Yeah.
Again, congratulations. The USA Today 10 Best 2025 Reader's Choice Award for Best Cultural Festival in the entire country is our own Dublin, Ohio Irish Festival. Thank you to Allison Leroy from the City of Dublin and for Columbus Perspective. I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
Mayors, council members, local elected officials, municipal staff, and community leaders from Central Ohio and around the country converged in Washington, D.C. for the National League of Cities annual Congressional City Conference. It's a crucial platform for local leaders to engage directly with policymakers, learn about key legislative priorities, and discuss solutions to pressing urban and rural challenges. Steve Patterson is the National League of Cities president. He hails from Athens, Ohio, and he joins us now on Columbus Perspective. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning. How many years has the Congressional City Conference been meeting?
We have been meeting for 101 years. Last year was our 100-year celebration, so this is 101.
I would assume that the challenges we face today are quite different from the challenges we faced in 1925.
Just a little bit.
So what did our local leaders and those from our community do at this conference?
You know, it was really a coming together of cities, towns, and villages from across the nation. The National League of Cities has about almost 2,800 members, and we come together to discuss the challenges and solutions that we're seeing throughout not only the state, but throughout the nation. You know, the good mayor is always one who's able to steal good ideas and bring them back home. But a lot of nice open dialogue. And then we are going to be going up on Capitol Hill to where we're going to engage with Congress. And we had the great opportunity to have the Vice President, J.D. Vance, who is also from the state of Ohio, with us to kind of talk about the vision from the White House, things that are happening in the White House. But to have the Vice President here was quite an event, and a very welcoming event to see the Vice President here.
There's a laundry list of things to talk about. We could name them, from school shootings to budget cutbacks to changes in educational infrastructure to a change in vision for the country in general. What were the main topics that the folks at this conference wanted to engage about?
You know, I have to say number one is just continuing to create new or reinforce established relationships with Congress and the administration, you know, because we know that the only way we're going to continue to see direct funding that we haven't seen in my lifetime coming from the federal government straight to cities, towns, and villages for things like infrastructure, we had a great project, or have a great project in my city, which also includes 20 other municipalities in southern Ohio, with a charging and fueling infrastructure grant, and sharing that story, but continuing to work with Congress to make sure that that financing continues to flow for what I deem to be pretty vital projects in southern Ohio. But that's a story that we're hearing everywhere. The other thing is housing. We think we all recognize the chronic shortage at this point in time throughout the United States. That's a conversation that's going on, and sharing some best practices that are happening, different programs that people are seeing at the state level. But we're constantly encouraging the administration as well as Congress to fund programs that will help our communities so that we have the right type of housing, and quite honestly, enough housing, so that we don't become a flyby if a new industry is looking to come into your community, a new company is looking to come in, and they're trying to find, well, where are my employees going to be living in your community? Rail safety is still top of mind, as we're well aware. The incident that occurred 2 years ago in East Palestine was devastating to a community. And so that's an ongoing conversation. We had a rail roundtable while we were here. We've had several in the past, and we'll continue to ask Congress to move forward rail safety legislation so that we have protections in place. And then another conversation that has been going on for a couple years now that we're going to continue to press on is the liability associated with the mandate to protect our communities against PFAS, which is a real challenge. But to not have a level of liability protection for municipalities, it means that we could find ourselves in a situation to where if PFAS is identified or detected in your water supply or even in your discharge from your wastewater treatment plants, that can certainly negatively impact us financially. And we find ourselves in a position to where we may be upside down with mandates that are put upon us to correct the PFAS and what that's looking like in our communities. And it's going to come with a high price tag.
In central Ohio in the past year, we have seen a number of economic development projects announced. And one that seems to be in question right now because of the administration's position on the CHIPS Act is the Intel plant, which is a county or so away from your backyard. Did that come up at all?
That in particular did not come up, although I am tracking that as it's unfolding. But there are similar stories, Jay, that we're hearing from all of our partners across the nation to where there are large projects. Some of them are well underway, and some that are in the early planning stages. Maybe it's engineering design on something, and that becomes a real issue with the CHIPS Act. It also applies to the Inflation Reduction Act, to where there may be municipalities that have decided, much like my city of Athens, Ohio, to where we were fortunate a couple of years ago to have a 2.1 megawatt solar array built, and a lot of that was riding upon the tax credits that are that someone can obtain for a renewable energy project. If that solar project were underway now, and we weren't even completely built out, and those tax credits are, you know, not available, that would have froze that project, and it probably would have left, you know, a half-built solar array, if any at all, depending on where you are in that process. So to your question, it is certainly a topic that has come up here at NLC, but the Intel project didn't come up specifically, but I hear what you're saying, and I'm tracking that as well.
When Vice President Vance said that having an Ohioan in the White House meant that the nation's eyes would be on Ohio, do you think that's true?
Jay, I think to a degree it does. But I'm going to kind of spin this a little bit. I would contend that yes, having the vice president from Ohio certainly casts a lot of attention on Ohio, but so does myself as being the president of the National League of Cities and Mayor Andy Ginther being the president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors.
We are well represented.
We are.
Steve Patterson, president of the National League of Cities from Athens, Ohio, we thank you for being with us. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV.
Ohio voters won't choose our next governor until November of 2026, but the race is already on. We're even seeing TV ads from Vivek Ramaswamy. The candidates are now working to get their messages out, to introduce themselves and their philosophies and their ideas on how to improve the lives of the more than 11 million Ohioans. On the Republican side, three candidates have entered the race so far. They are former presidential candidate and biotech entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy. President Trump has already endorsed him for governor. Current Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost is now serving his second term in office. Before this, he served as state auditor from 2011 through 2018. And Morgan County small business owner and former president of the Morgan Local School Board, Heather Hill. More on her in just a moment. On the Democratic side, only one candidate is running so far. Dr. Amy Acton is the former director of the Ohio Department of Health. She became well known during Ohio's early response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, we're going to learn a lot more about Heather Hill, her background and her stances on the key issues. As I mentioned, she is a small business owner and former president of the Morgan Local School Board. In 2023, Governor DeWine appointed Ms. Hill to serve on the Ohio Dr. Martin Luther King Holiday Commission. She and her husband of 30 years have two kids and have fostered many more over the years, according to her campaign website. Ms. Hill was also a founding member of the Morgan County Habitat for Humanity and is an Ohio University graduate. Ohio Republican gubernatorial candidate Heather Hill is my guest today on Face the State. Ms. Hill, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you.
Well, let's get right to it. First of all, why did you decide to run for governor?
Well, One thing that happened was one of my foster children was shot and killed by law enforcement. Mm. At that time, I had several Republicans and law enforcement officers that contacted me and asked me if I would be interested in running. At that time, I said no. And then almost exactly a year later, it happened again with another one of my foster children that were shot and killed by law enforcement. Again, law enforcement officers, fellow Republicans contacted me and said, we need you right now. And I said, I'll do it. So here I am.
So here you are. So what are your top priorities then in running for governor?
Well, I have a lot of top priorities right now. Ohioans are facing some devastating things right now, and I want to take care of most of those as coming in as a new governor. One of the things that I'm definitely wanting to do is make sure that our law enforcement and first responders receive top of the line training so that they're able to deal with people with mental illnesses and different circumstances that are coming up right now. So one of my main priorities will be building a state-of-the-art facility that trains our law enforcement and first responders with a live action city in that training facility. Another issue that I'm working on right now is building a committee that will help me with the property tax issue that Ohioans are facing. It's devastating for Ohioans. We have our senior citizens that can't afford to keep their homes. We have young people that are trying to start their lives and they can't afford to purchase homes because a lot of their property taxes are almost as much as the mortgages. There's just so many situations that we're facing right now as Ohioans. And, you know, Ohio has a trust issue right now. Ohioans don't trust our government. They don't trust our law enforcement. And they need me to come in as someone that they can trust and someone that will work on their behalf. I'm not a career politician. I'm not an out-of-touch billionaire. I'm a person that's going to come in here and is going to do what needs to be done so Ohio can be the best that it can be for all Ohioans.
You talked about trust, so why should they trust you?
They should trust me because I have proven over the years that I am a trustworthy person that will stand in the gaps and make tough decisions when it comes to doing what's best for Ohio. Like I said, I'm not in anyone's back pocket and no one is in my back pocket. I am literally here to do what's best for Ohioans, and people are gravitating towards that.
Education has been a huge topic of discussion lately, certainly this past week. Governor DeWine went to the White House Thursday for President Trump's signing of the executive order to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education. And we have a graphic to show. In a statement, he said, in part, by giving states more authority over education, we will have the flexibility to focus our efforts on tailoring an educational experience that is best for our children and meets Ohio's needs rather than trying to chase federal priorities. So, Ms. Hill, what do you think, first of all, of Governor DeWine going there to Washington, D.C. to be there for the signing of the executive order with the president dismantling the Department of Education?
Well, Governor DeWine over the years has proven that children are always on the front of what he does for Ohioans. And I will honor that as well. With my background, you know, I was a school board president, a coach, a foster parent, and I think that it's really going to benefit all of the states to have that brought back to a local level. With dismantling the federal Board of Education, Department of Education, it's going to allow us at the state level to prioritize where funding goes, to prioritize what's important in our schools. So I think that it's wonderful.
So you are a supporter of that idea.
Yes, I am.
Does it seem like it's happening too fast, though? It seems like, you know, some people would argue, okay, we're going to dismantle it, but there's not really a plan on how then to carry that forward.
Well, I don't think it's too fast because this should have happened a long time ago. We need to have control at a local level. Having people that don't understand what Ohioans go through, making the decisions on where our funding goes, what happens in our classrooms, what availabilities our parents have when making decisions, is not working for Ohio anymore. And people are standing up against that. So I'm very excited to see how this will work with bringing those responsibilities and those things back to a local level so that we can do what's best for all the students of Ohio.
Well, as a candidate for governor and as a former school board member and president, what do you think is the greatest challenge that needs to be tackled in Ohio education right now in the K-12 realm?
Well, one thing when I'm out talking to voters, their biggest complaint is that parents are not having control over what's happening in their children's classrooms. We need to bring we need to allow parents to have more say-so over their children's education and over their children's health care. Of course, funding. Finances are a huge, huge problem right now for all of our schools. I'm from Morgan Local, and I'm sure you've seen some of the things that are happening right now with our tech school program. I was a graduate from Morgan's tech school, and it's vital to our community. But people outside of our community might not understand that. So bringing those funding and those things back into a local level will give us more control over what's happening with our school systems.
And there's been a lot of talk also about, you know, the budget for schools, public schools here, with billions of dollars going to vouchers. Where do you stand on that, you know, the voucher and the choice programs versus putting public tax money into public schools?
I was a parent that had my children in public school, private school, and homeschooling.
Okay.
I support giving the parents the options to move their children into the schools that fit best for that particular child. Once again, I'm going to reiterate, no one cares more about a child's education than their parents. So we need to give the parents more control over where that goes, and that funding should always follow that child.
Okay. Property taxes has also been a big issue. You talked about affordability a little bit earlier. What do you think can be done about property taxes to make things, you know, more affordable for folks, especially those maybe who are on fixed incomes?
Well, I know my opponents are sending out a lot of fluff right now. We're going to get rid of this tax,
and
we're going to get rid of this, and we're going to make it to where we don't have state property taxes. I am not going to say that because I don't know what we're facing, and I won't know that until I get into the governor's office. But I know I will 100% work my butt off to make sure that Ohioans have all the tax reliefs that they can. We may not be able to completely remove property tax, but we can make it to where it's not so much of a burden that people can't afford to own homes.
They can't get rid of all the taxes, right?
That's correct.
We need to fund things for critical services. Now, we know you're a Republican, but how would you describe your philosophy as a Republican? As, you know, there's not just one type of Republican or one type of conservative. How do you describe your philosophy on that?
Well, I am a Republican. I'm a very strong Republican. You know, I own Ohio Hunting Lodge, and I've been a Republican for many, many years. There are different types of Republicans, and as you may have noticed during the last election, I made commercials that talked about it being okay to be someone that looks different or thinks different, but still supports our Republican leaders. And that's the kind of Republican I am. I believe in supporting the Republican leaders as long as they're supporting the voters.
Would you say that you're a strict, you know, very conservative, far-right Republican, more moderate Republican, a Trump Republican? Can you, or are you just somewhere in the, you know,
all
mixing
of the above?
All, that?
Yeah. All of the above. It depends on what issue. But I tend to lean more conservatively. But it just depends on what issue we're speaking about. I am not the type of person that's going to just blindly follow anyone, including President Trump. He has proven to me over the last election that he is somebody that has a plan for America, a plan that makes sense to me, and that's why I have gravitated towards what he's doing for America. So to answer that question, all of the above. It just depends on the issue.
And let's talk about one of the issues that is close to your heart, you and your husband. Fostering children, and you say that you've fostered many. I don't know how many. Over the years.
Over the last 30 years.
Well, what do you think about Ohio's foster care system right now and its state? Is it in good shape? Does it need to be improved?
We have a very broken system right now. Governor DeWine has tried very hard to fix this system, and I will follow the groundwork that he has laid, but there are so many changes that I am prepared to make the first year that I'm governor, the new governor for Ohio. First off, we need a landing pad. We need a place where when foster children are taken out of their home, that they are an area where they are able to de-escalate and
like kind of decompress.
Decompress, yeah. Yes. We need something like that. Foster children being in offices overnight or for weeks at a time because they don't have a placement yet is not acceptable, and that will not happen under my watch.
Heather Hill, Republican candidate for governor, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And working with me on the schedule to be here today. And it's good to get to know you a little bit and to help my viewers get to know you a little bit, too. So I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
The Ohio House passed a controversial overhaul of higher education in Ohio. The Advance Ohio Higher Education Act would eliminate DEI programs at public colleges and universities and limit faculty labor power. After about 3 hours of debate, the Ohio House passed Senate Bill 1 by a vote of 58 to 34. This marks another controversial bill, leaving people divided on where they stand. 10TV's Carly Dion has more on the vote and the controversy behind the bill.
DEI is insulting to me.
Some lawmakers at the Ohio legislature voting to do away with diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at colleges and universities. Those in favor of the bill say it promotes diversity of thought on campuses by doing away with policies that create a divide.
But DEI flips the script and judges people by the color of their skin rather than the content of their character.
I believe in diversity, but part of the government mandating diversity is it causes harm. It can promote racial stereotypes.
But the issue itself causing a greater divide. If it becomes law, it would prohibit universities and professors from taking positions on controversial topics. It would also prohibit faculty from going on strike. Democratic State Representative Terrence Upchurch voted against the bill, taking issue with the elimination of certain scholarships and the impact on professors being unable to go on strike.
Unfortunately, this becomes just another hurdle for our young people, and this is just another attack on organized labor here in the state of Ohio.
Other lawmakers in opposition say it takes diversity of thought away.
DEI was designed to tear down all of those barriers.
It's about making sure that we know how to interact with each other, about learning something other than what it is you already know. That's what you go to college for.
But ultimately, the majority voted to pass it.
It is time for DEI to be DEAD in Ohio.
That was Carly Dion reporting. Now, before the vote in the House, college students from around Ohio voiced their opinions on Senate Bill 1. Members of the Ohio Student Association and other protesters marched from the Ohio State campus up High Street to the State House. They then rallied outside for about 2 hours against the bill. Other college students from Ohio voiced support for Senate Bill 1 in the House Workforce and Higher Education Committee.
Personally, it targets me as a Mexican-American student by taking away my scholarships and my identity centers that help me stay in college. I literally wouldn't be able to afford college without the scholarships that I get.
For too long, our colleges and universities have become environments where one-sided political ideologies dominate the academic discourse, often at the expense of open dialogue and differing perspectives.
The bill is headed back to the Senate for a final concurrence vote on amendments to the bill. If that passes, the bill will then go to Governor DeWine. Once he receives it, he will have 10 days to sign it into law or veto it. His press secretary told me the governor will likely sign the bill, but reserves the right to review changes in the final version. We'll keep you posted. Last Monday was St. Patrick's Day. It was also deadline day for 44,000 state employees to be back working full-time in the office. Governor Mike DeWine signed an executive order in early February to bring all state workers back to their offices for the first time since the start of the COVID pandemic. It's already making a difference for some downtown businesses. Bagpipers, Irish dancers, A big crowd decked out in green. The Irish and Irish at heart soaked up the sights and sounds of the Columbus St. Patrick's Day Parade.
I think on St. Patrick's Day, everybody's Irish. So the luck of the Irish to everybody.
An unusual amount of foot traffic on Broad Street meant an unusual amount of foot traffic for the peanut shop.
Appreciate you. Have a great day.
But even without the parade of people into his store has picked up since Governor DeWine's executive order on February 4th bringing state workers back to their offices and other major companies in the downtown doing the same.
So we've seen an increase in about 20 to 25%. So we've seen an increase in sales pretty significant for, you know, the mandate coming back downtown.
Same goes for Little Cat Coffee and Three Bites Bakery right next door.
Yeah, actually, there's been an increase in office folks just coming in. Both excited to see that there's another small business that in which they're able to get coffee from, contribute to our numbers.
Under the governor's order, all employees at state agencies, boards, and commissions are required to perform their routine duties in their offices, with some exceptions. In February, the governor said he made the decision because he values working together in person.
And when each one of them is remote, you just don't have that interaction. You don't have them solving problems. You don't have them playing off against each other and talking.
Powell and Malonzo say the workers they've talked to seem to be taking the switch in stride.
Sometimes they've been a little bit reluctant with going back to the office, but a lot of them are, I think, excited for the ways that they get to interact more with downtown.
I think most of them expected it over time, but the big thing now is just like it's actually happening. I don't think they have too much of an issue coming back downtown, minus maybe the parking and traffic, you know.
A spokesman for the Ohio Department of Administrative Services says as of February 4th, about 15,000 state employees were still working remotely or on a hybrid schedule. Now they are required to be back in the office, again, with some exceptions.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV. From the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. Heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.